sandwich. Throw it, I say! Throw it!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show, holiday edition. Yes, indeed, 1 week till Christmas. My, oh my, oh my, where does the time go this time of year, whether you're getting ready for Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or all the other holidays celebrated this time of year? It just seemed like times fly, and you just don't have a chance to properly get ready for things. Well, that is unless you celebrate the holidays like I do these days, which is rather quietly, so I don't get all involved in the big shopping thing or... don't make a bunch of things like I used to, food and candies and all that kind of thing. Just kind of take it easy during the holidays. So maybe you're one of those as well. Welcome to the show. It's great to be back from the frozen north. Spent the last week in New York City. That's right. Went to the Big Apple last week. Had a great time. A spectacular week, I must say. I mentioned on our blog that... went to see some great shows. If you're in the New York City, and by the way, what a place to be at Christmas time, really. If you're gonna, it's the place to be at Christmas. Rockefeller Center, Saks Fifth Avenue's windows, and Fifth Avenue, and Broadway, and Times Square, and especially down at Radio City Music Hall with the tree, and the show by the Rockettes. Went to see a couple of Broadway shows, Wicked, which I have to recommend as definitely one of the finest shows I've ever seen. And Mamma Mia, being a big ABBA music fan, I really enjoyed that as well. Just had a great time. And if you ever get a chance to, you and a loved one get a chance to take off and head to New York City for the holiday, why, that's the place to be. It's a bit on the expensive side, that's for sure. But it really was good. But it's time to be back here in the Guy James Show studio. And have you got shopping done? Your Christmas shopping? If you're one of those that gets out and runs around, does all the Christmas shopping? Are you finished? Do you shop early, or are you one of those people like myself? If I've got anything to get for Christmas, seems like I always get it Christmas Eve on the 24th. All my loved ones know that. They know that I've been kicked out of stores on Christmas Eve many a time as they're locking the doors. You know, I guess rather than ask if you've got your shopping done, are you doing any shopping this year? You know, how about your job and your income and your family's financial security this year? Is Christmas a happy time this year, or is it a downer because of financial problems? You know, I hear that a lot. And you are welcome to call the show and let us know how you're feeling this Christmas. 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. And, you know, that brings up another question. Is Christmas a religious holiday for you? Or is it celebrated as some sort of a special family togetherness time, whether or not you're religious or not? I wonder. I ask a lot of people that. Maybe I shouldn't, but I do. Cold, cold, cold here today. I saw something last week I haven't seen in a long, long time. I saw some snow and sleet. Of course, we're coming to you live from Southwest Florida, and way south we're talking, and in the Naples-Fort Myers area. And it was 41 degrees here this morning. So you northerners, you're letting a little of that cold weather slip down here into the warm climate, and we don't like it very much. No, 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 no. It was 41 this morning, although I'm not one of those ones that freaks out when it gets cold. But you should see a lot of the natives around here, the people that were born and raised in Florida. If it gets below 60, you know, they get really cold. They break out the gloves and the hats and the long coats. It's kind of funny, really. Those of us who have migrated here from the great northern regions, myself, it's got to get pretty doggone cold. And it's never been cold enough to make me want to put on a pair of long pants just because I was cold here. So I don't think we set a record with 41 this morning, though. I know inland it got into the 30s over around Lake Okeechobee and over in there. And I read where there was actually, and maybe some of you locals can correct me, but I read just this morning that they spotted snowflakes here once in 1922. They didn't actually, you know, hit the ground, but they actually spotted snowflakes in 1922 was the last time. So, interesting. We didn't get near that today. So, it's been about 10 or 11 years since we had a freeze over here. You know, when you're along the Gulf, the water, for example, the Gulf Coast, the Gulf water, the Gulf of Mexico water right now is in the mid-70s. So, you know, it takes quite a blast of cold air to make it very cold and to freeze and so forth. And we just don't get quite that way. Pet peeve of the day. So, you know, I was talking about this with somebody. And by the way, have I mentioned we're going to have Congressman Steve Israel on? He's going to be on at 3:45 today, Congressman Israel from New York. He'd been on the program a couple of times before. Going to talk about that omnibus spending bill. Earmarks and all the goodies that go along with the huge monster spending bills, and we'll have him come along around 3:45 to explain good points and bad points about the spending bill. That's at 3:45. Congressman Israel from Steve Israel from New York, good guy. You'll enjoy hearing from him. 866-546-5254. As I was mentioning, I was talking to a neighbor today. About pet peeves. He's got a particularly interesting pet peeve. And mine, and you've heard me talk about my pet peeve quite a bit, maybe too much. Mine is the celebrity gossip on TV and in the papers and on radio and all that. Britney Spears and Lindsay Lohan and OJ, all this on the mainstream news. You know, I saw a program the other night. I can't honestly tell you the name of it, but they actually were talking for, they were going to talk, I didn't watch it that long, but they were going to talk for an hour about weight loss of Hollywood celebrities, who was number one and all the way down the list. Like, I really cared about that. And it is fascinating to me, this celebrity culture that we have today and the self-aggrandizement that this culture puts, you know, they have these award shows. Award shows put on by the entertainment industry so that they can pat themselves on the back and hand themselves Oscars and Emmys and Golden Globes and whatever else it is that they get. I just find that absolutely amazing. And, you know, even it's getting into the mainstream news some. And even Keith Olbermann, if I had a chance to talk to Keith, I would have to mention this to him. He's even got a segment on that kind of stuff at the end of his program, and I wonder why on earth does he do that. I really think the world and all of Keith Olbermann. I think he's got a great show. He's got great writers. The guy is intellectually just, well, he's a giant intellectually, a great writer himself, a great speaker, and yet he has this little segment, 5 minutes at the end of his show about this showbiz stuff. I don't get that. And I guess the sad part of it all is that that must mean Americans want that stuff. And I'm just befuddled by it. Why? Why do they want us? I mean, what's wrong with us as a nation when we seem to care more about whether or not Britney Spears is wearing panties than we do about our soldiers getting killed in Iraq? And there's been many a time when the story was about whether or not Britney Spears is wearing panties and there are people getting killed in Iraq and Afghanistan and not a word on the news. It confounds me. Is there any turning back from this kind of stuff, I wonder? Are we on a, you know, we're going to continue just to spiral downward over it? This celebrity culture and this sports culture. That's why I don't pay any attention to professional sports anymore. $300 million for A-Rod to play baseball. Come on. I was in New York City last week, and the papers, you would have thought it was the end of the world when the steroid scandal hit baseball. And I happen to think that'll be another nail in the coffin of professional baseball. Maybe not. But it was the big news. The big news. All this political news that we're going on, we're choosing a new president of the United States, which is terribly important, and yet steroids in baseball was the big news in New York. And, you know, we got these actors getting hundreds of millions of dollars. And I know it's always been a little bit that way, but come on. I it's getting out of control. And I think I noticed it a little more. I see that Oprah, and I know some of you will argue with me on this and think I'm terrible for saying it, but Oprah out campaigning for Obama. Oprah, a TV star, like I care, like I give a damn whatsoever what Oprah thinks ought to be the president of the United States, like her judgment. Hey, I know she's a billionaire. I know she made it big, and I know she's probably very smart, but she's a woman who used to do shows every bit as sleazy as Jerry Springer's. Remember those days? And Obama's using her to get elected, and people care. Why? I don't get it. I really don't. Maybe someday I will. 866-546-5254. I don't know what I did with it here. I had a... Oh, well. I'll find it a little bit later. I think we'll pause for a quick break coming up right now. We'll hear from Junior Bush a little more about his Christmas story, and we'll be right back.
And now, WeeklyRadioAddress.com presents part three of It's a Wonderful Presidency, a five-part holiday special featuring the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Suppose it'd be better if I'd never been born at all.
All right, you've got your wish. You've never been born.
What?
You haven't a care in the world. No approval ratings, no Congress, no $1.6 trillion deficit.
Now, Clarence, what the hell are you, some kind of hypnotist?
No.
Hey, who are you?
Hey, Nick, it's about time.
Foxtrot, we got intruders in the Oval Office.
No, Nick, it's me, George.
Where do you come off calling me Nick? What? I don't know you from Adam's offhand.
I'm your boss. I'm the president
These
of the United...
jokers we get on the White House tour. All right, out you two pixies. Go through the door or out the window.
Uh-oh. Clarence.
Come on.
They're
going
to take us to Guantanamo. No. We're going to get waterboarded.
Guantanamo? They closed that down years ago. And waterboarding was declared torture by the UN at the urging of the president.
Now, wait a minute.
Now get out of here.
I told you, George, you don't belong in the Oval Office. You don't belong anywhere. You see, you haven't been born.
I'm telling you, what I need is a couple of good stiff drinks. Come on, we'll stroll over to Martini's place. I'm sorry, I'll stroll, you fly.
I told you, I can't fly. I haven't got my wings yet.
Right, you haven't got your wings. Now, this is normally where I meet my motorcade. It's not here.
You have no motorcade, George.
Well, I had a motorcade. I guess somebody must have moved it. Hey, you, where's my motorcade? And my jet. Where's Air Force One?
You must mean two other motorcades. We don't use fossil fuels and vehicles anymore. Everything's solar in Al Gore's America.
You mean George W. Bush's America?
I mean Al Gore. Don't you think I know where I live?
Well, either I'm off my nut, or he is, or you are.
It isn't me. See, George, you were never born. You have no identity.
What do you mean, no identity? My name's George W. Bush. I got a bunch of signing statements here to prove it, right here.
There's no George W. Bush. You've got no signing statements. You've been given a great gift, George. A chance to see what the world would be like without you.
It's a living nightmare with alternative energy and health care and... Look, so long, mister. I'm going home.
Home? What home?
To the West Wing, God darn it. Now shut up. Cut it out. I'm about ready to just plumb give up believing in angels.
Next week, part four of It's a Wonderful Presidency. A heartwarming holiday special from weeklyradioaddress.com featuring the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Join us this Thursday midnight Eastern on Foxed Up. We'll take a listen to the 1963 Christmas fan club message the Beatles recorded exclusively for the club members.
In the meantime, Gary Crimble to you, Gary Mimble to you, Getty Babel, dear Christmas, happy birthday, me too.
And you'll hear a Christmas song recorded just for the club series. So be there this Thursday midnight Eastern on Foxed Up, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Merry Christmas, everybody!
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Back with you here on the Guy James Show. Welcome. Glad to be with you after our little hiatus in New York City last weekend. Always good to know we're sitting back here with the Head On Radio Network crowd and all of you, no matter where you may be listening, over at iTunes or Democrats.com or DU or any of those places, welcome to the show. Glad to have you along with us this afternoon. 866-546-5254. If you'd like to give us a call here at the show and express your feelings about anything we have to say. I did want to express my feelings today about one of my, and I, with tongue firmly in cheek, one of my very favorite people. Drool from the mouth of the drug junkie Rush Limbaugh. Heard something he said today and had to go and find the quote. And I thought some of you ladies might be interested in this. Not that you didn't know that he's a pig already, and he is. But let me quote Mr. Rush Limbaugh on his program today. You know, it's hard for me to imagine that any woman could be a Republican. Really is. It's hard for me to fathom that, knowing that this drooling, drug-crazed, mindless idiot is their leader. It really is hard for me to fathom that. And just let me quote something out of the mouth of the drug junkie Limbaugh, and I quote, "Now, this theory of mine, based on this drudge picture of Mrs. Clinton with the headline, 'The Toll of a Campaign,' now it could well be that there's a sympathy photo, too, to make people feel sorry for how tough the campaign trail is. Now, I want to preface this by saying I know it's going to get out there. Media Matters is going to get hold of this, and they're going to take it all out of context." Let me stop the quote right there and say, Mr. Limbaugh, we never do things out of context on this show, so we're quoting you directly. Back to the quote. "We can expect that it's a badge of honor when this happens, but for the rest of you, I want you to understand that I'm talking about the evolution of American culture here, and not so much Mrs. Clinton. There's this thing in this country that as you age, and this is particularly, you know, women are the hardest hit on this, and particularly in Hollywood. America loses interest in you, and we know this is true, because we constantly hear from aging actresses who lament that they can't get decent roles anymore, other than in supporting roles that will not lead to any direct impact, yay or nay, in the box office. We know that the presidency ages the occupants of that office rapidly, but men aging makes them look more authoritative, accomplished, and distinguished. Sadly, it's not that way for women, and they will tell you, look at all the evidence. I mean, I've just barely scratched the surface with some of the evidence, and so will Americans want to watch a woman get older before their eyes on a daily basis? End quote. From Mr. Limbaugh. Isn't this just typical of the thinking of a shallow-minded, insensitive, egotistical piece of human crap like the world's most famous drug junkie? He's not only has contempt for all women, which he's demonstrated over and over again over the years, but now he shows that he has, you know, particularly disdains mature women. Probably because he knows mature women are by and large intellectually superior to him, and probably in most cases better looking than his monkey ass face. So stop and think what this guy has said here. He's implied that John Chipmunk Cheeks McCain, Fred I'm So Tired I Can't Stay Awake Thompson, and Rudy I Grow My Hair 2 feet Long on One Side So I Can Come Over My Bald Spot Giuliani, he's implied that they're all dashing, handsome studs, while Hillary is an aging woman, and it's just going to be a horrible thing to watch her age in the White House. God, doesn't this insufferable bore have any shame? And moreover, do the women that listen to his show, don't they have any shame? You know, personally, I happen to prefer a woman with some distinguished maturity. I'm not one of those guys who has to find myself a young chick in order to feel manly. I've always felt that's ridiculous. You know, women my age are interesting, and in many ways they've got the advantage over younger ones. Maturity is a good thing, Rush. You you monumental idiot. I know of women, although his crowd mostly is hardcore right and right winger men. But I think if you're a hardcore right wing man and you follow the direction of Mr. Limbaugh and you you agree with his feelings about women aging, and you agree with him calling strong women feminazis, if you share that with your wife that you agree with Mr. Limbaugh on that, I hope she comes down and knocks you silly in your easy chair some night, because that's exactly what you would deserve. Fascinating to me that Rush Limbaugh get away with saying a thing like that. It really is. But then, you know, when the drugs start working on your head as much as he's ingested in his lifetime, well, you know, no amount of money is going to keep you sane when you've sucked up as much hydrocodone and Oxycontin as he has. I guess that's all I'll say about Mr. Limbaugh, but, oh my. And, I couldn't let the day pass without mentioning, this little oddity that took place here locally. Maybe you've heard about it. The Lee County, Florida, which is Lee County, is where I live in Florida, where the show originates from. The Lee County, Florida Sheriff's Department, a distinguished group of lawmen, if ever there was one. And that's a story for another day. They arrested and hauled to jail a man by the name of Jack Tanner. And it seems that Jack is affiliated with the a high-level affiliation, I might add, with the Florida campaign of Mr. Ron Paul. And Jack was attending the Lee County, Florida Civic Center gun show recently. And he wasn't in the hall, rather, but he was outside in the driveway about 25 feet off the state highway, so he wasn't breaking any laws. And he was holding up a vote for Ron Paul sign. Well, it seems that the lady who was running the show didn't like a Paul person in her driveway, and she called the Lee County Sheriff's Department and actually had this guy arrested and hauled away in a cruiser for holding up a Ron Paul for president sign. And by the way, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that she was wearing a vote for Fred Thompson button. Just a little local gossip about Republicans fighting amongst themselves. Speaking about Ron Paul, what is he going to do with all that money he raised? I guess the better question is, what can he do with it? Now, we know that most of the airtime for the Iowa primary has been bought up. And there's, even if he wanted to, he can't buy airtime out there. It's gone. It's sold. So what is Ron Paul going to do? And moreover, what the hell are people doing donating all this money? As I understand it, did I hear this right? This was the most money ever donated in one day to a presidential candidate, and it's Ron Paul, for God's sake? What is wrong with America? Ron Paul. We have some very deserving people run for the presidency. And yes, I know, you don't have to remind me, every single one of them's got a wart or two. I know that. There are no perfect candidates running for the presidency. God knows that's the truth. But Ron Paul, for God's sake, Ron Paul setting a record for the most money ever raised by a candidate in a day. Ron Paul? I think I might have mentioned a week or two ago, he looks like those people who are sitting around waiting for the Hale-Bopp comet. The guy is nuttier than a damn fruitcake. Oh, sure, he's anti-war. Okay, wonderful. A lot of us are. I'm anti-war. It doesn't mean I ought to be the president of the United States. I just think it's Looney Tunes that, and I know this, a lot of Democrats even, a lot of liberals have jumped on this Ron Paul bandwagon. Now, to be sure, it's going nowhere. Nowhere. Let's be practical here. Ron Paul is going nowhere. First of all, he's going nowhere as a Republican. The Republicans all look at him as the crazy uncle, often the, you know, and the recluse crazy uncle over in the corner someplace at the family dinner that nobody talks to. Democrats, many on the far left, are embracing, I don't know if many is the right word, but many I've heard of, embracing Ron Paul because he's anti-war. I don't understand. And I don't think I ever will. If you are a true liberal, please, I implore you to take a look at Ron Paul's stance on immigration. It's interesting to say the least. To say the least. You would think he was from planet, what is it, planet Kolob? Or don't get me started on that. Or I will. You know I will. Yes, I will. And I will do a story about the other planets some of these days. And I think there are probably a few of you there know what I'm getting at, don't you? Yes, you do. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us here in the Guy James Show. Speaking of Republican insanity, did you hear that about Tony Snow appearing out in Oklahoma? I guess it's fitting that he was in Oklahoma for this speech at, where was it, Oklahoma Christian University, the famous and much noted and lauded OCU. Oklahoma Christian University last week. He is getting more and more bizarre all the time, is Tony Snow, and it seems like when he feels like he's safe in some place like this, what is it again? Oklahoma Christian University. big time university, I guess. The story goes, the winsome and articulate Snow charmed his audience with wit. And let me quote Tony Snow. You think these right-wingers aren't crazy? I mean, here's a man that was the press secretary for the President of the United States, and he's out making comments like this. He said, and I quote, "The average Iranian is more pro-American than virtually any college faculty in this country," end quote. The average Iranian is more pro-American than virtually any college faculty in this country. Now, if this man believes that, he's quite literally insane. And if I were the powers that be in the Republican Party, I sure as hell wouldn't want him out speaking on behalf of me. But to think a man who makes a statement like that is much loved and adored and respected by the President of the United States, so much so that he was his press secretary. That's absolutely scary, to know that they think that way. And I guess the question, my question to you is, do they really think that way? Or is that more propaganda that's out there pushing? Or does Tony Snow? I think Tony Snow believes that. I do. And, of course, he was also at this Oklahoma Christian University speaking about the war on God. Tony, this is so stupid. So stupid. It's like this ridiculous so-called war on Christmas. There's no war on Christmas. There is no war on Christmas. For someone to even say that is just, it's just absurd. Absolutely absurd. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Well, Guy, this is somebody that's given you a break for me for a few weeks. That's Dave out in Eureka.
Hi, Dave.
You know, in watching these debates, and I suffer through even the Republican ones, Ron Paul is blatantly opposed to the war in a very forthright manner. I mean, he's calling it a hoax and a fraud.
Oh, yeah.
And he also wants reinvestigations of 911. So I think that's where people are seeing him. And nobody wants to ask him a word about all of his privatized Social Security, bring an end to Medicare, all the social things that he stands for. They just don't want to touch on that. And they haven't. So I don't think most people know what that man is about. That's my opinion.
I think you're absolutely right. I haven't heard a single person in the mainstream media ask any questions like that at all about him. And, hey, that's important.
Right. And everybody is opposed to the war, and I think that's including most of the Republicans. And so that's why he's getting money. They don't know what he would do to their social nets.
Oh, yeah. And you know, I think I heard the figure $6.4 million he raised I don't know, yesterday or day before. Wow. I mean, that's 50,000 people, they say, donated in one day. So,
well, that's people that are saying, we want out of this war.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, isn't it something that people would be so, that we would be put in a position to be so desperate to be out of a war that people would start considering a guy like Ron Paul for president without considering all the other important issues that are on the table? People don't know anything about his domestic agenda. They don't know anything about his agenda on immigration, which is really scary. He's an odd duck, that's for sure.
Yeah.
It just surprises me that there are so many Americans that are willing to take a chance on a guy like that and throw caution to the wind and say, hey, he's against the war, let's just make him a president. I don't know, Dave.
Well, you know, you maybe know more because you've spoken of him with some real concerns about it. Issues, but most congressmen say, despite all his bizarre positions, he's a very honest, forthright man. He says what he thinks. So I don't know if you think that would be accurate or if he.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I have not seen any evidence that he's not honest in his beliefs. That he doesn't You know, I've seen a lot of these flip-floppers. I've seen the Romneys and Giulianis, and these people get up and talk, and I know damn well they don't necessarily believe what they're saying, but they'll say anything they have to get to be. I would not accuse Ron Paul of that. Almost certainly not. I believe that he fervently believes in everything that he says, so I would not accuse him of not being honest. Certainly not. Yeah.
That's the position even of Kucinich. I know you deserved your week off, but we've all missed you very much, Guy.
Well, thanks, Dave. It wasn't just pleasure. It was business. So it was business with a little pleasure thrown in as a sidelight, and it was great.
Good to have you back in life.
Thanks for calling, Dave. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program. Joe Lieberman. What can we say about our good friend Joe Lieberman? I think Joe Lieberman is a disgrace. He's allowed to call himself a Democrat. I guess you can call yourself anything you want to in this country, but he's no such thing. Joe Lieberman has backed Bush and his war from the very beginning. Joe Lieberman has been down on his knees to Bush, if you know what I mean, and the Republican leadership since even before the last election by the people of Connecticut, who, by the way, must be dumber than a proverbial box of rocks to put this guy in office. When we had a perfectly good candidate in Ned Lamont, and I'd urge all snake oil salesmen in America to head for Connecticut because evidently it's so obvious that that's where you could make your fortune. Thank God that, on the other hand, in Connecticut, Chris Dodd is trying to make up for Lieberman's idiocy, and it's a tall order to be sure, but at least Dodd's trying. I really believe, and I don't know how many of you agree with me, I believe the party leadership should formally strip Lieberman of any and all of his committee assignments and completely disavow any connection with him whatsoever. Force him to join the Republican Party that he just seems to love so much. You know, the thing is that I don't think Joe Lieberman's endorsement of McCain will help him at all in the final analysis of this whole thing. Sure, there may be a temporary bump for McCain, but I think it's going to be meaningless in the end. Even the offbeat New Hampshire voters aren't going to go for McCain this year because of his zealous support for Bush and his war. They just aren't going to buy it. But that doesn't mean Lieberman's endorsement is totally meaningless. Oh, no. It's going to give the press the opportunity to bash the Democrats for being weak. That's exactly what they'll do with it. But, of course, Reid and Durbin need to, you know, step up and show some guts and throw Lieberman out of the party. Have a public, you know, one of those right out on the Capitol steps. Strip him of his seniority and let him join the Republicans. Turn him loose. I just fail to see why the Democratic leadership hasn't learned by now that it just didn't work to kiss Lieberman's ass to get him to caucus with him. It didn't work. It's gained him nothing. He's sold out on almost every important issue, so it's time to just shove him out the door and to hell with the consequences, which I believe would be certainly just minimal at the worst. You know, first, the current Senate, the organizing resolution guarantees Democratic control of the committees. So committee control means that even if Republicans had Cheney to break ties, no votes would come to the floor without Democratic approval. So even in the case of a Supreme Court opening, Democrats could still keep any nomination bottled up in the Judiciary Committee, even without a majority in the full chamber. You know, there's all these arcane Senate rules. And Democrats aren't doing anything with their majority anyway. Yeah, they've had, They've talked about their moderate watered-down success on the minimum wage and student loans. And those are important. I'm not diminishing the importance of those. But presidential vetoes have hurt them and hurt them bad. And meanwhile, they have allowed Republicans to filibuster without having to filibuster nearly every piece of Senate business. I say if they're going to filibuster, make them do it. And Senate Democrats have been completely unwilling to press the advantage of the majority. And that's not even mentioned in the 2008 electoral map and the current events. Democrats are being tagged as do-nothings, and they're being tagged as being weak. And so I think, given Lieberman what he deserves, and that would be a boot in the ass right out the door of the Democratic caucus, get him out. Refuse to let him caucus with him. It wouldn't cost him that much. And it just might make the rest of us out here, who are sick and tired of a lot of the things that the Democratic Congress has done and hasn't done, it just might make the rest of us stand up and say, hey, all right, finally you're showing some guts and doing the right thing. It might just energize the base out here. And, you know, Lieberman's going to have to run for election again, should he choose to do so in, in 2009, is it? He can go over and join the Republicans. Let him vote with the Republicans. He's a turncoat. He's another one of those guys, I'll sell my vote to the highest bidder. He has done it. He has given in to George W. Bush. It sickens me when I look at the record of Joe Lieberman. And I hear him mention the word Democrat. Well, I'm an independent Democrat. You're an independent Lieberman. You're in the Lieberman Party, Joe. And I'm not going to say that the rest of the politicians are, I shouldn't use the term the rest of them. I'm not going to say that there aren't a hell of a lot of them that feel the same way. But Joe Lieberman, you've been out there in front. You've embarrassed the Democratic Party. You've embarrassed Al Gore. You helped cost Al Gore an election. And your cockamamie stories that you come up with in the last couple of years about why you want to back George Bush and everything, tell it to somebody else. I don't want to hear it anymore. Kick his ass out of the party. Out. We don't need the likes of Joe Lieberman in this party anymore. We just don't need it. Well, I'm going to take a quick break and... we'll be back in just a moment or two. Don't go anywhere.
Round up the usual suspects.
Hi, boys and girls. This is Rick Goodner, part of the Weekend Wrecking Crew. And I'm here to tell you that you cannot miss Billy Shears. The man knows his music. The man knows what you're thinking. Tune in and listen. You'll be surprised. He's going to play the very song that you were thinking that you needed to hear. Now, he's a genius. Maybe a bit psychic. I promise you. Tune in on the weekend, listen to Billy Shears Night Sounds, and you will hear the song you've been waiting to hear. And you'll enjoy your time as much as I do. Right here, on the Horn, Head On Radio Network. Make sure you don't miss what you've been waiting to hear with Billy Shear.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Play as time goes by.
I'm not afraid to
And we're back. And as promised, we have Representative Steve Israel, Democrat of New York, with us. Congressman Israel, welcome to the Guy James Show.
Good to be with you, Guy.
I look forward to talking to you today. I might explain that our audience is pretty much a very political audience and keeps close track of just about everything going on in Washington. And of course, one of the big things right now that we wanted to have you on today to talk about is the omnibus appropriations bill and the good points and bad points about it. What do you think so far? Are you satisfied with it?
Well, no. I don't know of anybody who's completely satisfied with this. You know, there's no ecstasy over this budget. The bad news is that the budget comes in at the president's overall funding cap of $474 billion for domestic spending. The good news is that we reprioritized the budget. So we met his spending cap, but we took out a lot of things that he wanted in that budget. We eliminated funding for some of the things he wanted in that budget in order to increase funds for accessibility for health care, increase funds for college tuition assistance, increase funds for the environment and renewable energy, and some other Democratic priorities.
Well, by and large, do you feel like this is a victory for the Democrats? Is it more in favor of what the Democrats wanted, or have we once again ended up in Bush's pocket with this?
Well, I don't think we ended up in his pocket. The most honest thing I can say about it is that does reflect the kinds of investments that Democrats wanted in health care and education, homeland security, and other Democratic priorities. But it doesn't go as far as we would have liked. The problem we had is we have an intransigent president who said that he was willing to veto the federal budget and close down the federal government. Now, we've had enough failed states under this administration, and we shouldn't be the next one with a government that closed down. And up against that kind of threat, the best we could do was to say, fine, we'll give you your numbers, but our priorities. And that's exactly what this budget reflects.
Many of my listeners and people that I've talked to all across the political spectrum have wondered just what it is. You just mentioned that Bush wanted this and Bush wanted that, and that he may have indeed threatened to shut down the government over this and all. Do you think he would have done it? And where does a 30% popularity president get the power to do this?
The answer to your question, do I think he really would have done it? Yes. This is a guy who has never stopped short of recklessness on anything. He is as stubborn as you can get and does drastic things, like Iraq. For him to just close down the government, because he didn't get his way, certainly he would have done it. The fact that he's at 30% in the polls, Guy, politically, quite honestly, we probably could have scored points and saying, okay, we dare you to close down the government, and then he closes it down, and we're in a showdown with a 30% approval president. But who would the real victims be of that? The real victims would be people who can't afford to pay their heating bills, and as a result of a government shutdown, they don't get federal assistance to help them pay their heating bills. The real victims would be people who are relying on their Pell Grants and student loans, and as a result of the fact that the government is shut down, they don't get that assistance. And I don't think that those people should be hostages in a political fight. At the end of the day, sometimes it's tough to make the adult decisions. The president showed childishness, I don't mind saying. Republicans showed childishness on this. We had to be the adults who said, okay, we'll meet your numbers, we'll reflect our priorities, and we'll keep the government open.
What would you consider as the top victory for the Democrats in this budget? Something that you actually wrangled away from Bush that he didn't want to give in on?
The top victory would be $3.7 billion in increased spending for veterans' health care. This is an administration that has no problem sending men and women into battle and then trying to shortchange them on their health benefits when they come home. The administration has fought us on veterans' health care. Every single budget since they've taken office, we got $3.7 billion in additional spending for veterans' health care, the largest increase in veterans' health spending in the 77-year history of the VA. I say that is one of our that's our top victory. The other thing that we forced on the administration is they had funding in there for the continued development of nuclear warheads to replace older nuclear warheads, and we zero-funded that program in order to put money into things like veterans health care and educational enhancements.
What are the thinkings on that? Since you brought it up about replacing older warheads and so forth, are we as a country, is our military looking at the long range, like that we'll still need hundreds of nuclear warheads, that we're still spending billions of dollars on doing this?
Well, you know, I've just come back from Afghanistan. I was there 2 weeks ago, and I learned there that the Taliban and Al Qaeda, 6 years after 9/11, are stronger, better than ever, more sophisticated. You know what the military thinks about in Afghanistan? New improvised explosive device technologies that the Taliban is putting out, not replacement warheads for the old stockpile. We're in a different kind of mentality when it comes to warfare in this century. It's not the conventional nuclear threat that used to keep us up at night. Now it's asymmetric threat. People with improvised maritime devices and explosive devices, and that's what we need to keep our eyes on, rather than spending billions and billions of dollars replacing nuclear warheads that frankly don't need to be replaced.
I'm having a lot of correspondence coming in on the internet right now, email, people wanting me to ask you some things, so I'll ask you some of the things that they want to know. First of all, they want to know if money has been appropriated for nuclear energy research as an alternative to fossil fuels.
There, in the omnibus, there was some funding that was put into nuclear energy research. We were also able to restore over $400 million for renewable energy research against the administration's wishes. So both nuclear research, and there are a lot of differences in the Democratic caucus about nuclear research, but the fact is that we did put some money in for nuclear research in order to reduce global warming, and for over about $450 million in renewable energy research and development.
I'm also
over the administration's request.
I'm also being asked about something you've touched on already, about somebody from Wisconsin is asking about closing clinics with vets still in the waiting rooms in northern Wisconsin. The veterans are getting short shrift a lot of places around the country, aren't they?
Well, they have gotten terribly short thrift under this administration. The $3.7 billion that we put in will add thousands of new caseworkers, keep clinics open, reduce waiting times, and lower the cost of copays for prescriptions for veterans.
Earmarks. In your district, you live in a interesting area of New York. You're not city, you're not rural, you're kind of in between the way I see it. You don't have any huge highway programs going through. What about some of the earmarks that got by through this year?
Well, we reduced earmarks by over 40% from last year's levels. Now,
40.
I will tell you, by over 40% from last year. Now, I will tell you that I make no apologies for earmarks. Look, if the administration refuses to invest in nursing homes, in my district, or in environmental improvements on the Long Island Sound, if they refuse to make those investments, my job as a member of Congress is to fight for those investments. And if they come in the form of so-called earmarks, that's fine. So I don't make any apologies for earmarks. Still in all, we reduced it from 40% from the Republican earmark levels.
Well, I don't think he should apologize for earmarks. I mean, there are times when they're very appropriate. It gets a bad name because of the Bridges to Nowhere and things like that. Here in this show originates in Southwest Florida, and although it's a national show, and here locally, you may have heard on the interstate highway right here, we had a congressman from Alaska raising money right here in Southwest Florida for an interchange here, an interchange to nowhere. So it's that type of thing that people are complaining about, not the nursing homes and so forth. Where are we going to be on the military funding right now as far as what Bush is asking for? What do you think is going to happen?
The omnibus that we approved in the House contains no funds for Iraq and $30 billion in funds for Afghanistan. The Senate will take up the omnibus, and we don't know what they're going to do. There's some talk that they're going to add money in for Iraq. The President has demanded $200 billion and another blank check for Iraq. We've given him not a penny in the omnibus that passed the House last night. Now we're waiting to see what the Senate's going to do with respect to funding Iraq.
Well, I know there are many things involved in political decisions on Capitol Hill, and you know, we don't know what the Senate's going to do, and the president is demanding this and demanding that. The people out here sometimes, and the Democrats and people on the left, wonder if the Democratic folks on the Hill aren't a bit intimidated by the media, the right-wing media. And I think when they talk about liberal media, that's a joke. I don't think there is much of a liberal media. Is that in fact true? Do they worry about getting pounded over the head by the mainstream media?
I can't tell you what's on the minds of every single one of my colleagues. I always find it rather amusing when I hear this huge kind of right-wing media infrastructure talk about the liberal media. I just can't understand it, quite honestly. I think that every member has to make their own decisions, their own calculations. I will say that it has been frustrating for Democrats when you have Republican members of Congress who put their political interests ahead of the public interest. It's frustrating when you have a Senate where they need 60 people to agree out of 100 on anything and everything. You know, we keep passing these bills in a Democratic House of Representatives. They tend to get bogged down in the Senate. So there is some frustration. Despite that, we passed the minimum wage over Republican objections and the president's objections. We passed historic increases in student college assistance over the president's objections and Republican objections. We have increased funding to NIH and to medical research over the administration's funding. So I think we have some good achievements to point to. Do we have everything that we wanted? No. But that doesn't stop us from continuing the fight.
Well, that's better than where we were before we took
that's
control
sure.
of Congress. Congressman Steve Israel, I want to thank you so much for being on the Guy James Show and answering many of our listeners' questions. We appreciate hearing from you and hope to get back with you again soon. Thank you
Anytime.
So much.
Anytime. Thanks so much.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Congressman Steve Israel, District 2 Democrat of New York, and he's been a friend of the show for a long, long time, and always good to talk to his office. He's one of those folks that if you want to get past the BS and find out what's really happening, he won't throw a lot of politics at you, and that's always a good thing if you want to know. Sometimes you just want to talk to these people and say, look, tell me what's up, please. Forget the mumbo jumbo. Just tell me what's up. And he's a guy that you can usually talk count on for that. So he'll throw party politics to the wind in many cases and tell you what's on his mind and be honest. And that's something that's all too rare in politics nowadays, don't you think? Hey, you're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Billy Shears, music director. We're going to pause for news at the top of the hour, and we'll be back, and I expect that you will be as well. Grab yourself a cold one and get ready for the second hour of the show.
sometimes you picture me, I'm walking too far ahead. You're calling to me, I can't hear what you have said, and you say, go slow. If you're lost, you can look and you will find me time after time. If you fall, I will catch you. I'll be waiting time after time. If you fall, I will catch you. I will be waiting time after time. If you're lost, you can look and you will find me time after time. If you fall, I will catch you. I'll be waiting time after time. If you fall, I will catch you. I will be waiting time after time.
Well, I dreamed I saw the knights in armor come and saying something about a queen. There were peasants singing and drummers drumming, and the archers split the tree.
There was a fanfare blowing to the sun that was floating on the breeze. Look at Mother Nature on the run in the 1917. I was lying in a burned-out basement with the full moon in my eyes. I was hoping for a replacement when the sun burst through the skies. There was a band playing in my head, and I felt like getting high. Thinking about what a friend had said, I was hoping it was a lie.
Well, I dreamed I saw the silver spaceships flying in the yellow haze of the sun. There were children crying and banners flying all around the chosen one.
All in a dream, all in a dream, the loading had begun. Flying Mother Nature's silver seed to a new home in the sun.
James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, do you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. 6... 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, welcome back. Talk about a catastrophe at the top of the hour. Don't know what happened to the news feed at the top of the hour, but hey, you're all computer mavens. You know what the news is today. You didn't need to hear that anyway, right? All right, yeah, we'll let you know if there's any great bulletins or anything. You know, I mentioned earlier on that I was in New York City last week, and aside from all the fun things, going around seeing the shows and the great food and the sights, the Christmas sights and 30 Rock and all that, I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you about my experience of going down to Ground Zero. I assume some of you have probably been there. And I must tell you that I probably would not have gone, had it not been for somebody mentioning to me, you need to go see Ground Zero. So I did. It's way down in Lower Manhattan, as you know. Those of you who are familiar with New York are down by the Staten Island Ferry, at the far end of Staten Island, of Manhattan. And you get off the bus or the taxi or whatever you ride in. So what happens, it was on a bus. And you get off and walk a block or so, and there it is. And there's this feeling that comes over you that I can't really explain. It's still, although the debris has been hauled away, it still has this eerie quality to it, this monstrous hole in the ground, the big cement walls all the way around, the ramp that you've all seen on television so many times, and they're working feverishly to build the foundation for the new, I think they're calling it the Freedom Tower, and you can see the plans there, and a couple of places that you can take a look and see, observation deck and so forth. And there's many new buildings around that they've built. That one in particular that I can't think of what the name of it is, but over on the west side of it. And you look down into this tremendous cavern in the ground, and you can't help but relive those awful moments of that day. You can't look into that huge cavern in the ground and not envision that plane and those planes hitting that building that day again. You can't do it. And although there are hundreds of men working in down in there, men and women working down in that hole, and cement trucks everywhere and cranes and all, you can close your eyes and you can see the chaos of that day. You can close your eyes and see that huge cloud of debris and asbestos and God knows what. down between the canyons, in between the big buildings all around the area. And it does look like canyons. You can relive those moments that you watched on television that day, that many of the folks in that area experienced live. You can see the horror of it over again. And it's a sobering moment. And as I was walking through one of the buildings, looking at this one particular place where you could look out a window and look right down into the Ground Zero, I noticed a small gathering of people sitting on the floor, and the marble floors of this beautiful new building. And they were paying rapt attention to a lady, I would say approximately, I don't know, I don't want to embarrass her, but somewhere around 55 years of age, somewhere, I would guess somewhere in there. Very distinguished looking lady. And they were listening intently to her. And so I walked up and I stood at the back of this small gathering. And it only took a moment to understand that she was the widow of somebody that was lost that horrible day. And she was telling her story, her family story, about how it took a day or so when Dad hadn't come home to really let it sink in that he was gone. She had a daughter that lived in New York and another one that lived out of town, a son that lived out of town. And she had to call them and let them know that their father wasn't coming home anymore. And it was a poignant moment for me to listen to this. It's the first time that I've been face to face with somebody. We've talked with them on the air here. But it's the first time I've stood face to face and talked with somebody who's gone through that experience. And to see the attention paid by the small group that was listening to her, they looked like perhaps a group of high school or college students, and to hear her story. And it was an interesting moment for me. It's one I shall not forget. There was a gentleman there with her who's... And I'm sorry, I don't have the card here with me at the moment. I got both of their cards. The gentleman was the head of a group that does, 9/11 talks, and they are one of the groups that they've gotten up after 9/11 of survivors and so forth. And we'll have both of them on the show soon, very, very soon. And I promise you, it will be interesting when we do. But I wanted to tell you about that. It was a time that affected me, and I won't forget it. And I think anybody that ever goes and stares down into that huge hole in the ground will never forget it. It was a defining moment in our history. It seems as though every generation has its defining moment. My parents' defining moment was Pearl Harbor. It was a defining moment when President Kennedy was assassinated, and Bobby, and Martin Luther King, and 9/11. So most certainly be a defining moment in this younger generation's time, and it's something that'll burn in the memories of everybody that ever saw it, both live and in television, forever. And the interesting part about it all is the New Yorkers that you talk to about it, they're so resilient. New Yorkers being what they are. And God knows I've done my share of criticisms of people of New York in their brash, sometimes harsh manner. I mentioned to somebody that I walked past Famous Ray's Pizza, and if you haven't been to Famous Ray's Pizza, Let me tell you, they can have all the pizza contests. And I happen to see this contest between Chicago and New York on the Travel Channel, I think it was, some time ago. And they talked about Famous Ray's Pizza. And I thought, you know, the next time I get to New York City, I've got to get some Famous Ray's Pizza. So you walk in and there's about 10 pies sitting there. You know, you're an out-of-towner. You never had Famous Ray's Pizza. And you're looking at it and going, I don't know, maybe this one, maybe that one. Can't decide what to have. And there's that quintessential New Yorker behind you going, come on, hurry up, will you? Same thing at JFK. You're there with your shoes off, your belt off, your computer bag, your cell phone in the box, you know, your coat, your, my God, all the things that you've got at the airport, and it's a clumsy moment. You know it is, especially if you're not used to carrying a coat and so forth like I'm on. And I've got like three of these trays going through security at JFK, and, you know, there's a half a dozen New Yorkers behind me at this point. Come on, will you? Come on, move it. So my comment about the New Yorkers, but it's interesting to see how people even survive in a city like that. It's fascinating to me. Somebody that has lived in the not the fast lane all my life, to see the hustle and bustle of the city and how people cope with it in different ways. Very, very interesting. 866-546-5254. Yeah, we go to Washington fairly often, and we don't, you know, I don't think Washington doesn't seem like a big city to me. I mean, it is. But Washington, I don't see as city. I see Washington as history. And history, just every place you look in Washington, D.C. That's what I like about it. Did I say that? 866-546-5254. You're welcome to give us a call here at the show. I wanted to talk about the latest, greatest big deal in the Republican Party, and I'm not talking about anybody other than Mike Huckabee. Have you noticed how he is now the darling of the Republican Party, and the evangelicals are peeing their pants over this guy? Mike Huckabee. Yes, sir. And I got to tell you, I think this guy is perhaps the biggest slickster to ever get involved in politics. He has got the rank and file of the Republicans and the evangelicals and the fundies. He's got them eating out of his hand right now as this great guy. He's just so real. He's just the country bumpkin from Arkansas that's funny and engaging. And they love Mike Huckabee. And, you know, I really like that Huckabee guy because he's not from the Beltway. He's not one of the insiders. He's just, how refreshing it is to see Mike Huckabee running for president of the United States, a lot of people are saying. This guy is Mr. Slick. They called Bill Clinton Slick Willie. Well, I'll tell you what. I think as far as being a huckster, and his name is perfect for this, there is nobody better than Mike Huckabee. When you read his story and the things he's done, why, it's absolutely unbelievable. Somebody's mentioning on the, Powder Puff's mentioning on the chat room right now, one of the stories, his son was fired from a Boy Scout camp for torturing and killing a stray dog. And, okay, your kids do that. Well, not my kids, and maybe not your kids, but people's kids do that, and I won't hold their parents responsible for some of the awful things that, you know, sometimes kids go astray, and Huckabee's kid may have been a dumbass and done something fine, but his kid doing that is not the story. It's how Huckabee tried to cover it up that's the story. It's how Huckabee ended up getting somebody fired from their job over it. It's how Huckabee is not some country bumpkin from Arkansas who doesn't know politics, but is just a preacher who happens to be. Oh, no. This guy is slick, let me tell you. He is perhaps the biggest liar that has ever run for office, and I'm sure of that. I have read volumes on Huckabee here in the last couple of weeks, and I can't believe some of the things that this guy has done. You know, at first blush, I too thought this guy was an Arkansas bumpkin. And by now, I'm beginning to believe he is a highly polished politician who is more than capable of fooling every last fundy in America into thinking that he's the second coming. You know, he said during that debate a while back, I'm paraphrasing it, that Jesus was too smart to run for public office. Well, you know, that may be. That just might be, but I think old Huck is recruiting Jesus anyway. And if you don't believe that, let's listen to this latest ad, and then you tell me what you think of this latest ad by Huck, the Huckster.
Are you about worn out of all the television commercials you've been seeing? Mostly about politics. I don't blame you. At this time of year, sometimes it's nice to pull aside from all of that and just remember that what really matters is the celebration of the birth of Christ and being with our family and our friends. I hope that you and your family will have a magnificent Christmas season. And on behalf of all of us, God bless and Merry Christmas. I'm Mike Huckabee, and I approve this message.
Yes, I'm Mike Huckabee, and I'm running for president. And guess what? Guess what? I'm going to have Jesus help me do it. That's right, because I'm going to have a Merry Christmas thingy here for you. And you know, folks, don't miss the message of that ad. Don't miss the real message of that ad. The real message of that ad is not, gee, I'm a nice politician here wanting to wish you folks a Merry Christmas. No, 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 no. That is not the message of that. He's got every right to do that ad. Don't get me wrong. I'm fine with having him dress up in his preacher getup and doing it with a Southern Baptist cadence. I don't care. That's fine with me. But pay close attention to what the Huckster's really doing there. He's trying his best, and I think doing a good job of it. He's trying to create a controversy using Jesus. Plain and simple, he's saying to the Iowa Fundy crowd, if you don't think there's a war on Christmas, wait till you see what the lefties say about this ad. And believe me, there's plenty of ads complaining about it already. I'm not complaining about it. I'm saying, Mikey boy, you have at it. You recruit Jesus all you want to in your ads, and I know you will. I know you will. But this is no Merry Christmas ad at all. Not at all. This is what this ad is saying is, look at the bad Democrats and see how much they hate me saying Merry Christmas, those dirty heathens. But not to worry, I, Mike Huckabee, exemplary Christian and highly moral man, I will defend Jesus against the unbelievers. That's what that is all about. So make sure all your right-wing friends find out, if you can. Make sure they find out about the real Mike Huckabee. Because I'm telling you, the guy is an imposter. He's perhaps the best imposter I've seen come down the pike. And there's this guy named Lane Filler down in Spartanburg, South Carolina. And he talks about meeting Huckabee at the Beacon. Have any of you ever been to the Beacon restaurant in South Carolina in Spartanburg? Let me tell you, I've been there. Been there, done that. But anyway, Lane Filler writes this story, and I just had to dig it up for you. Lane Filler from Spartanburg, South Carolina, talking about Mike Huckabee coming to Spartanburg. And let me quote this article. President aspirant and former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee doesn't have to worry about making bail if he gets arrested on the campaign trail, or so the American Automobile Association membership card he carries in his wallet promises. Wednesday at the Beacon Drive-In, I saw Huckabee pull out his wallet, trying to make a point about tamper-proof ID for immigrants. Inspired, I approached him moments later and said, "Show me the entire contents of your wallet, and I will truly know you." And Huckabee says, okay. He carried a handgun permit, a frequent flyer club card, 5 credit cards, 2 gift cards, a Marriott card, an AARP card, his hunting and fishing permits, an expired duck stamp from last year, a slip listing the contact numbers of his band, capital offense, and about $175 in cash, mostly in small bills. He needs the frequent flyer cards because he travels on normal planes, U.S. Airways, for this trip. He needs the credit cards and cash because he pays for stuff. And some candidates have their staff handle the taxis and tips, but his national field director is his daughter, Sarah, so he's probably used to grabbing the tab. He goes on to say, the wallet tells me that Huckabee is a fairly normal guy. Ask John Edwards what is in his wallets, and I suspect he'll answer, you know, my daddy worked in a mill, and his wallet was made of cast-off cotton, lint, and elbow macaroni. Me, what's in your wallet now? And then he goes on to talk about Edwards. But it's interesting what people kind of think about this Huckabee. He's, he's not what he says he is. And I'd like to bring up a couple of things about him. You know, a lot of you read the Carpetbagger Report, and I do as well. And there's a story in there about, does Mike Huckabee have a theology degree? Does he? About a month ago, Republican presidential candidates were trying to position themselves as the best suited to combat global terrorism and terrorism. And Giuliani, of course, was pointing to 9/11. McCain was showing us all about his military service decades ago. And Huckabee pointed to his ministerial training. And let's quote him. He says, I think I'm stronger than most people because I truly understand the nature of the war that we're in with Islamofascism. He told the Christian Broadcasting Network, these are the people that want to kill us. It's a theocratic war, and I don't know if anybody fully understands that. I'm the only guy on that stage with a theology degree. I think I understand it really well. Well, the Carpetbagger goes on to say, now on its face, it's a pretty unpersuasive pitch. After all, how much could Huckabee have learned at the Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in the 1970s about 21st century fundamentalist Islam? Probably not much. But as it turns out, the theology degree claim may be more than unconvincing. It also may be false. The New York Times Magazine article that's been getting lots of attention this week, including this tidbit, if young Mike Huckabee was ever rebellious or difficult, there's no record of it. He preached his first sermon as a teenager, married his high school sweetheart, and went off to, now get ready because this is a place you've all heard of, Quachita Baptist University in Arkadelphia, Arkansas. There he majored in speech and communications, worked at a radio station, and earned his B.A. in a little more than 2 years. He spent a year at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth, Texas, before dropping out to work for the televangelist Dame James Robison, who brought him his first decent wardrobe and showed him how to use television. Aha! We're starting to see the foundation here. He drops out. This is the guy who said he's the only one up there with a theology degree. He drops out of the Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth, Texas, and goes to work for James Robison, who bought him his first decent wardrobe and showed him how to use television. Uh-huh. Huckabee, a seminary school dropout? Mm-hmm. To be sure, I don't care about Huckabee's theological training. More to the point, I realize that people, even presidential candidates, tend to exaggerate their resumes a bit. But isn't it a little odd for a preacher running on a religious right platform to tout a theology degree that doesn't appear to exist? Huckabee's campaign is writing back about those who question him about his theology degree and says, Jim, he's writing a reporter, says, Governor Huckabee doesn't have a theology degree. He only spent it. Now this is coming from the Huckabee campaign. Mind you, this is his campaign. Huckabee's research director, Joe Carter, sends the National Review, Jim Garrity, this email. This is Huckabee's research director. It says, Jim, Governor Huckabee doesn't have a theology degree. He only spent a year at the seminary. Did we not just hear that the man said that he was the only one on the stage with a theology degree? Also, it goes on from his campaign to say, also, it's not surprising that he doesn't know much about the specific beliefs of the LDS Church. That's Latter-day Saints for you folks, the Mormons. There aren't a lot of LDS members in Arkansas. They comprise just 0.007% of the population, about 20,000. Most Southern evangelicals don't have much exposure to that particular religion. Even in seminary, you're not likely to study the LDS faith unless you take a class on apologetics. Joe, that's from the Huckabee campaign. Fine. So Huckabee's campaign admits that he doesn't have a theology degree. This is after he said that he did. Why then did he tell TV preacher Pat Robertson, CBN, I'm the only guy on that stage with a theology degree? Why did he say that? This is the man who's the darling of the right now. This is the man that all the fundies out in Iowa and all the evangelicals said, oh, I think we found our guy. He's not one of the Beltway boys. He's a fresh face. This guy is a cold, calculating liar of a politician. That is what Mike Huckabee is. You know, there's plenty more outrageous scandals surrounding Huckabee, and they haven't come to light because he hasn't been the fair-haired boy up till now. But it does seem odd to me that this man has been going around claiming to have a theology degree when he does not. That's a fundamental lie. So there you go. There's another one. We're finding out about Giuliani, that Giuliani is dirty beyond belief, that he's a man that certainly no thinking person could consider Rudy Giuliani as the president of the United States. And let me tell you, after having been there last week, and I don't want to belabor the point, there are not a hell of a lot of people in New York City think very much of Rudy Giuliani either. So on the one hand, we've got him. We've got Fred, I don't think I can stay awake long enough to be President Thompson. We've got Romney. The deal from being from other planets, and we'll discuss that on another show, I promise you. If you don't know what I'm talking about, I encourage you to look it up. But it's just an odd situation when you start looking very, very closely at these right-wingers. It's fascinating to me. It really is. And for him to say that he doesn't know anything about LDS in Arkansas, believe me, there is nobody in the evangelical group, the fundamentalist group, you would never find anybody that didn't know a whole lot about the Mormons. Of all the religions out there, the fundamentalists are the most threatened by Mormonism because it's they think it's a cult. They preach that it's a cult. They know all about it. You know, one of the things that Mormons do, they're missionaries. When they're out talking to people, they carry the Bible, they go door to door. You don't learn about the Book of Mormon until a little later on. And I can guarantee you that fundamentalists and evangelicals that study religion know all about Mormonism. So for Huckabee to his campaign to say he doesn't know anything, no, it's not that he doesn't know. He does not want to comment. And I don't want to get into a big, long religious discussion in here. We'll do that another day as far as Mitt Romney and his religion. But I just merely brought all this up to show you how completely disingenuous is Huckabee. And to the degree where even I have been shocked over some of the things, you know, when he left the governor's mansion in Arkansas, he literally tried to clean the governor's mansion out and take the furniture with him. It wasn't his, of course, but he did try and take it with him. Gifts. Dozens, if not hundreds of gifts he took. It was improper for him to take. Here's a man that is just not honest. And here's a man that is very, very good. I think he's very dangerous. Here's a man that's very good on TV. He learned from Reverend Robeson about how to use television, and there's no question that Huckabee is an expert on how to use television. He looks so sincere when he looks into the camera. So, he's mastered the art of television, and he's as slick as they come. So, all you right-wingers, talk about Slick Willie if you want to. But I have to say, I don't think I've seen him any slicker than Huckabee. I really don't think I have. I just think he's an interesting guy. 866-546-5254. That's 866-546-5254.
Rudy Giuliani claims to be the hero of 9/11. However, a recent caller to the Guy James Show disagrees.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hello. How are you? Hello to everybody.
Good.
My name is Deputy Chief Jim Riches, and my son died on 9/11. Jimmy, he was a firefighter down at Ground Zero. And the reason I'm calling is to let everybody know about Rudy Giuliani. He says he's Mr. 9/11, and that's anything but the truth.
And lest anybody think that you or a small band of firemen are having some sort of a sinister plot against Rudy Giuliani, this is widespread amongst the New York City firefighters.
Yeah, I work in the firehouse. I'm a deputy chief in the fire department. I go around to numerous firehouses every tour. When you go there, the only thing you hear after Giuliani's name is a four-letter word, and it's not hero. He disrespected our brothers that died that day. And we have no use for that man.
Tell me what to believe when I hear them telling me. your vote.
Hey, we're back here in the Guy James Show. Welcome back. Glad to have you along with us. You're welcome to call the show at 866-546-5254. We've been talking a little bit about Mike Huckabee. And, you know, my mission on this show is to inform you. I'm not going to make up your mind for you. I want to inform you and let you make up your own minds. And I know you will. You're a great group. You're a smart group. You're a politically astute group. And, you know, armed with a little bit of knowledge, you can go out and talk to other people. And I think everybody needs to know the truth about these candidates. And it's not good enough just to go out and say, well, I don't like this guy. He shouldn't be president. No, you got to have a good reason, and you got to be able to explain your good reason. And that's one of the things we do on this show. All right. And to answer about 25 emails I got there within a minute, and we'll talk about this in a day or two. I don't want to get the whole thing started today, but I'll talk about it in a day or two. And just to get to all you emailers off my back, I want you to go Google, those of you that are upset with me, go Google Kolob, K-O-L-O-B, all right? K-O-L-O-B, you Google that. And then you Google Olibish, yes, Olibish, O-L-I-B-I-S-H. Got that? O-L-I-B-I-S-H. You Google that, and you Google Kolob, K-O-L-O-B, and you'll understand what it is we're going to talk about in a couple of days. All right? Interesting. All right. Hey, let's take a call. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Juanita.
Hello, Juanita.
Hi. Welcome back.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say I enjoyed hearing you talking about being in New York City.
Oh, thanks. Well, it was a pleasure. Mostly business, but some pleasure, too.
Well, I'd like to say a little something about New Yorkers.
Yeah.
You know, being a Southerner, you have to get used to them. But they're some of the sweetest people ever. But they do, you know, rock a wrong chord with you sometime, but that's just the way they have to live up there.
Seem to be a wee bit impatient now and then. come on.
Yeah, that sounds just like it, but they are some of the kindest, sweetest people, I think. And I you know, when you understand what they're about.
Sure.
But I totally agree with you about Mr. Huckabee or whatever he is. I think he is dangerous. And I think, kind of from the South, you know how some of those preachers can act.
Oh, sure. And let me be clear. I have no objection to a fundamentalist preacher being a president of the United States, if he's honest.
Right.
That's all I care about. I don't care if you stand on your head and hang from the ceiling and you know, from the Zulu tribe. So long as you're honest. That's all I care
mm-hmm.
about. And
absolutely.
That's got nothing to do with anything I was talking about. Just be honest.
Well, and you know, I don't know if you said this or not, but the one thing that really got me was I'd been hearing about him releasing this one guy from prison.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out the story behind it, I'm sure you know that it was the man was supposed to have raped a distant cousin of Clinton's. Therefore, it couldn't have happened, you know, because it was
somebody came to him. He got this person pardoned, and then this person went out and raped and killed somebody else.
Right, two
and,
girls.
And that did happen.
Uh-huh.
And then, and you know the story. Well, it's Clinton's fault. It turned out to now that you know, it was that Bill Clinton's fault.
Isn't everything?
Well, yes, yes.
I think
Bill Clinton was behind that Mount St. Helens thing. I'm just pretty doggone sure that he caused that thing to blow up.
Yeah. Probably he dropped the first atomic bomb.
There, it's something to do with that, but it's Clinton's fault.
Yeah. But anyway, I just wanted to welcome you back and.
Thank you, Juanita. Good to hear from you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Huckabee is an interesting guy. You know, he's got an immigration plan, and it's fun to look at these guys' immigration plan. And Huckabee has got an immigration plan that calls for the deportation of 10 to 12 million illegal immigrants within a 120-day period, okay? That's right. That's right. Mikey Huckabee has actually suggested that he can deport 10 to 12 million illegal immigrants within a 120-day period. So Dave over at Ornicus, he decided that he was going to tell everybody, show us what deporting 10 to 12 million illegal immigrants within a 120-day period would look like. That after all, we're talking about a truly enormous numbers. The logistics alone would be daunting. We're talking about rounding up and shipping out 100,000 people a day. Those are numbers that would make the notorious Palmer raids in the 1920s look like a drop in the bucket. So just to get a rough idea what we're talking about here, let's review what recent raids by Immigration and Customs Enforcement raids have looked like. In Idaho, one family with members who are U.S. citizens and legal permanent residents say they were terrified by Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents who came to their home in the pre-dawn hours, accompanied by the Blaine County Sheriff's Department. No one in their home was arrested, but the folks in the house said they pounded on our door so hard that the walls shook. Dana Ayala, a Wood River Valley resident and U.S. citizen, told the Idaho Community Action Network, "My 19-year-old son opened the door to see what was happening, and six agents armed with guns, tasers, and flashlights pushed their way into my home. It's clear that the ICE agents terrorized the community, including the U.S. citizen and children who were sleeping when the raid occurred." Testimonies gathered about the whole thing said they ended up that they went into the home with no proof of immigration statuses. In some instances, federal agents rushed into the house when a child opened the door. In Arlington, Illinois, on the morning of February 27th, ICE agents swept into the Cano Packaging Corporation in Arlington Heights, Illinois, a mostly middle-class white suburb 25 miles from Chicago. The agents arrested the undocumented immigrants who had been hired by a temporary staffing agency to work at Cano. The nine men and eight women then were bused to a jail, which also serves as a regional immigration detention facility. Maria De Carmen Santana says she was invasively strip-searched and told the process was a search for hidden drugs. She was handcuffed so tightly that it left marks on her wrist. She was unable to get pain medication for severe tendinitis. She said it was disgusting the way we're treated. We weren't murderers. We aren't drug addicts. Our only crime is being here to work without papers. So Huck says he's going to round up 10 to 12 million people and get them out of here. He's going to do that. That's 100,000 a day. You know, I don't think so. I don't think so. Well, so now you know. 866-546-5254. Take a good look at Huckabee. And once again, don't forget to do your Google work there. Kolob, K-O-L-O-B, and Olibish, O-L-I-B-I-S-H. We're going to pause for a quick break, and we'll be right back.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
This is Billy Shears. Join us this Thursday on Foxed Up at midnight Eastern, where we'll take a look at Lenny Kravitz.
The spiritual, you know, it's very important to me. It should be important to all of us, you know. It's like, especially the situation that the world is in, you know. I think it's time for people to really start to think about this whole universe and where we come from and where we're going and get involved.
So be there Thursday midnight on Foxed Up, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
We want peace, we want it, yes, we want peace, we want it, yes, we want peace.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Mm-hmm.
not sure of love, 'cause what I feel is not enough. I'm close to you like a friend, yeah. More than that is just pretend.
To the Guy James Show. Oh my, a little bit over 3 minutes left in the program today. Where's the time gone? I want to thank Congressman Steve Israel for being with us. Just found out, let's see, who's going to be with us tomorrow? Let me take a look here. I think Representative Hilda Solis from California is going to be on the program tomorrow. So we'll have some more folks from Congress on tomorrow to talk about the spending bill. There's a lot to talk about on the spending bill, and I'm sure you know that, and we'll talk about it a little bit more tomorrow. So round up your questions for Congresswoman Solis tomorrow. It's kind of been a mission today to talk to you about Mike Huckabee. We're going to try and feature each one of these presidential candidates here in the near future. I know I mentioned a little bit about Ron Paul earlier today. Someone asked me the other day, the question, to paraphrase the question, be fair, isn't there anybody on the Republican side that you could vote for? Think about it. Is there somebody on the Republican side you could vote for? And I thought about it for a while. I always try to be fair. And my answer is no, hell no. You look right down the line. Thompson, come on. Paul, please. Giuliani is a thug. Huckabee, he's a huckster. Who's left? McCain? McCain when he's capitulated to Bush the way he has and got down his knees and kissed Bush's ass and who knows what else, he showed me he's no kind of a man whatsoever. Romney, flip-flopper, you want to talk about flip-flopper? Biggest flip-flopper in the history of politics. So let's not give us that flip-flopper thing anymore. Have I missed anybody? I guess the answer is no. There is nobody on the Republican side that, even if I were a Republican, there's nobody there that I could vote for. I just don't think I could do it. I don't know how you'd hold your nose and be able to vote for any of those folks over in the Republican side. I really don't. It's a really sorry looking field. Very, very sorry looking field. So, no, I don't have anything good to say about them. I really don't. And I try and always be fair on this show. You know that. I talk about Democrats sometimes in a rough manner. If they got it coming, say so. But this current crop of Republican candidates, and they know it. Don't kid yourself. They do know how weak this field is. There isn't anybody there that would make a decent president, and they know it. They're completely convinced of that. So this is no surprise to anybody over in the Republican side of the fence, I'm sure. Well, it's been a pleasure being back with you today. We'll be back tomorrow with more interesting things to say and host your phone calls and your emails and ideas. Be sure and visit the new blog, theguyjamesshow.com/blog. Go on over there and let me know what you think. theguyjamesshow.com/blog. Thanks to Billy Shears for being music director. Thanks to everybody, the entire gang over at the Head On Radio Network. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow, gang.